This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
We are back. There are a lot of former sports writers here. We got George Solak, the outstanding writer from the Globe Democrat. Dennis Dillon, former outstanding writer from the Globe Democrat. Myron Holtzman. And then we have Greg Marasek, who before he got into sports talk radio was the sports editor of the West County Journal. Wasn't it you on top and then Jim Bear on the back page of that sports section?
Right, and actually we had 14 papers, I believe, at the time. West wow. County, South County, all over the place.
Greg Marasek is the smartest guy I know. He was in sports radio, and he got out. And he made money off it, and he got out.
With this radio station,
with this
by the
particular
way.
Right. signal. How did he do it? He should write a book. You have written books.
How many have you written? Halfway through the autobiography, yes.
Oh, you're writing an autobiography
yeah.
now?
Really?
How many total books for you?
Five. Working on 6 and 7.
Big Red.
The Hawks.
The Hawks twice. Two different versions. And then the Cardinals of Cooperstown.
Oh, yeah.
And... Yeah, that's it.
This would be a great topic. We were arguing with Strickland one day about the Hawks and their exit, and Charlie Tuna and Strickland were arguing back and forth about the Hawks leaving
shocking.
And that there was a racial element to it, that the family didn't think St. Louis would support an African-American team or whatever. Take
because
us back.
They started 5 African-Americans their last year here in St. Louis.
So I think Charlie was making the case that that was one of the reasons they left, and but Strickland, friends with the Kerner family, said that's not true at all. What was the exit like for the Hawks? What were some of the dynamics?
You know what? It definitely played a role. Just as big was two other
Blues.
Things. The Blues. And the fact that the city was helping the Blues renovate the arena. And they wouldn't help Ben Kerner renovate Kiel Auditorium. Ben Kerner had to buy his own score clocks, his own 24-second clocks, which were required by the league.
Yeah.
And they said, we're no part of it. And then he wanted them to build some special suites upstairs, and chairs were breaking down. And they said, you're there. We're not going to help.
That team at the end
was great.
It's Lenny Wilkins, Hall of Famer, Zelmo Beatty, Bill Bridges, Lou Hudson, an NBA All-Star.
Right.
I mean, that's an unbelievable squad. And and they were not supported at the end?
No. And we won 19 of the first 20 games that last season. We were 19-1. We won the league going away.
Wow.
I mean, 57, 58 wins, something like that.
Was it known they were leaving? Was it similar to the Big Red and the Rams where we kind of had this idea that this is it, that they're out of here? Or
it came as a shock.
So they're playing and winning all these games. Nobody's avoiding the team because they think they're leaving. They just didn't go.
Right.
Like, they just didn't support them.
It was about half filled when it used to be all filled. And I think just as big as the racial concept is the fact that people thought it was scary to go downtown.
At that time?
This is 50 years ago.
This is 1968.
My dad and I would park a couple of blocks away, and he'd say, we'd literally run to the building. My dad said, let's...
Boy, so much has changed.
Pick up the pace. Don't talk to anybody.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So when you began KFNS, there was KASP.
Yes.
And then
there was Curl, KIRL, for a while.
But wait, did they do all sports?
No, not
no.
all sports.
But KSP did sports,
yes.
And then you took it up a notch at KFNS.
Right.
What made you think that was going to be a good idea?
It was a challenge. You know, I've lived my whole life just accepting a challenge and going after them. And I thought I thought timing was great. First of all, I had a great relationship with Karen Carroll at KMOX. And the radio station cycled. It's kind of like the Raleigh Fingers deal Herzog made. He was a Cardinal, but he wasn't. Well, 590 was owned by CBS for a couple of days. And then it transferred to me because the company in Boston that made a deal with me, not a written deal, but a deal, told CBS, we've already made a deal. Deal's done. And took it away from them. And gave it to me.
That was when, 97-ish or no? Before
earlier than that.
Earlier than that. This is 90. Let's see,
4 or 5.
Yeah, even 3. Yeah, about 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, what made you think?
My theme was to get stars like you guys. I mean, and seriously, I mean, guys who are known. Everything I've done in my sports career, I've tried to go to the top and say, you know, it's going to work best if you got the people who, the guys who people want to hear from and recognize. And so I went and got, you know, the Al Raboskis, the Jack Snows, the Al McGinnis, the, and so on. It'd be easier to sell them than somebody that no one's heard of.
And then what made you think, you know what, it's probably a good idea if I get out of this now?
Cable TV. I can say it in a heartbeat. I saw that it was coming, that advertisers could buy cable TV for the same thing that they're paying us, and they get to see themselves on TV. I said, this is going to be a problem, because you're going to have to compete with a visual. And if we can move this thing, now's the time. And thank goodness we did.
I think the career frustration, anybody who's been involved, though, in sports radio, is that if you go to Arbitron or these places, oh, well, nobody listens because you don't pay for the rate. It's amazing. You buy those ratings.
Right.
You seem to have a really good number. You don't buy them. It's like you don't exist. So if you were sitting down with Arbitron, they say, oh, well, no, nobody listens. Anywhere Frank goes, I guarantee it, or we have some sponsors, like everywhere I go, they heard me or they texted me. It's like all these people are listening, but if you ask Arbitron, well, nobody's listening.
Exactly,
the feedback and the buzz you get everywhere you go is, oh, I heard you guys talking to Greg today. I heard people are going to text you, hey, I just heard you on with Martin and Frank.
Yeah, they will.
And yet if you go to Arbitron, oh, no, it doesn't exist. I think the system is flawed, and that's the frustration.
I went to a national meeting of radio guys like me who set it up with Arbitron to discuss the deal and say, look, this isn't working for us. We don't buy your subscription because we can't sell your number. And we don't believe your number. So what you need, this was before, too, they also had the where you can wear it on your belt. And, you know, we said at least do that so there's some truth to it. And they dawdled.
It's impossible to truly monitor it. Yeah. And, you know, that's the beauty, I think, and you know this, when it works, it's because the sponsors are happy or they like being a part of a show, and then they get feedback because Frank talked about them or whatever. You know, that it's just so. I think it's just more organic than some of the corporate stuff.
And my broker did a great job of finding these people in Atlanta.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
The key to
Frank,
it all.
You'd love this, Frank.
Big league
during the courting
broadcast.
During the courting of getting the radio station, they flew me down to Atlanta, and took me to a Hawks-Celtics playoff game.
Oh my goodness!
In the front row. And sitting next to me is Dominic Wilkins. And I'll never forget that night. And the Hawks won the game. And I'll never forget, I hadn't been that close to an NBA game in a long time. A bouncing ball is coming right at me. Wilkins is getting out of the way. I'm sitting there. And here's this giant, humongous Kevin Garnett, coming on me. And I mean, he fell on me. And he grabbed me before I just hit the deck backwards with the chair and all. And I said, "Ooh, this is a rough and tough sport still.
Time to get out of sports radio and sitting on the sideline." It always goes back to the Hawks for Greg.
Yes,
it is the Hawks. Yeah, you know what I'd like to do? I'm trying to put together in Los Angeles an event with Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, Bob Pettit, and Cliff Hagan, and maybe a Celtic. And just Los Angeles doesn't have many events like that. They don't have a Hall of Fame.
You know, it's interesting you brought up Baylor. I just finished reading his book, and it's almost like in every one of these books with these old NBA players, they talk about coming to St. Louis and just how racist it was. I mean, I had no idea, but almost every one of these African Americans, from Russell to Baylor, they talk about how terrible it was to come to St. Louis to play an NBA game.
Richie Guerin was the coach. The players made so little money, they would work for the team in the offseason and sell season tickets, go door to door to companies. And Richie Guerin told me one day, he said, I went to the big corporations here, and over I heard, well, are you going to start those African Americans again? Because if you are, we're not going to buy the season tickets.
It's not shocking, but it's still heartbreaking to kind of hear that.
Oh, my God, and we were so good.
Good stuff. Greg, honored to have you come by, and we appreciate everything you've done for St. Louis and for Sports Talk Radio.
Thank you,
sir.
Anytime.
Other than bringing Big League into our lives. No, I'm kidding. It was great. It was a great era. It'll all be in the book, right?
Somebody had to suffer, yeah.
It'll all be in the book.
Yeah. All right, we're broadcasting live from Norwood Hills Country Club. This is the 123 Club Christmas Party, and this is like a Globe Democrat Sports Department reunion. I'm looking at the great Joe Castellano, Myron Holtzman, Dennis Dillon, George Solak. How many? Yes, another one. Mr. Lang, yes. I wonder if we get the commish to come by for just a minute here. Hey, Rick.
This is like Radio Row at the Super Bowl, Frank. You just sit here, and they're walking by, and you grab them, and then all of a sudden they'll work in an awkward mention for a sponsor. Marshall Faulk sits down and talks
yes.
about avocados. They're all pitching some. That's the Super Bowl. This is the equivalent here. It's Radio Row, the Hall of Famer, the commish, Rick Hummel.
How many years
got,
for you, commish, a part of this 1-2-3
club?
He's
got poker chips falling out of his pockets here from Vegas.
I'm not entirely sure. I'd say 30-some anyway. I don't think it does it say in there. Yeah.
Hold on. I got the book. Let's see.
Well, they have alive and dead, I think, of what we have there.
I think you're 19. Is that 1984? I can't see in here. It's so dark. Where's the commish? I think they list you as an 84
that
member.
Sounds about that right.
Are you at the Friday meetings at the Pasta House? Monday meetings.
Monday, yeah, whenever I can get there. It's hard because sometimes I have to do that chat during the baseball season. So
describe for our audience at home what happens at these luncheons at the Pasta House on Monday.
Well, first of all, let's go back to the name of the club. It's 1-3, and that's when they used to meet. It's 1-3.
Oh, okay.
Many years ago. But these guys had so many stories saved up, they couldn't wait till 1 o'clock to get there, so they started showing up earlier and earlier. And now we show up at 11. 11 to 1 doesn't have any ring to it, though.
And you've seen everybody from who to who that's actually popped in the Pasta House on some of these days.
Sam Muchnick, Jack Buck, Bob Bregg, and then you have some great football players that are there now, like Gus Otto, Johnny Rowland. Jackie Smith's been there once in a while. He may be here today. Sandy Pomerantz, great basketball player.
Blue City, WashU.
Rich Hantak, longtime NFL official. Dave Phillips, longtime NFL umpire. Whitey Herzog, of course, is a longtime member of the club. Jay Randolph.
Well, there's not a lot of oxygen left in that room. I mean, that's just sit and take it all in. And from what I recall, I went one time, I believe, there is no program or format. It just kind of begins. Somebody will say, well, the Billikens looked good last night, and it'll just kind of roll.
Well, it's a little more organized now. That's the way it used to be. You're right. But the moderator will say, let's talk about football first or baseball or whatever is the burning issue. And sometimes golf is, and Jay, pontificates on that. But and I get involved in a lot of the baseball discussion. A lot of these guys are retired. Even though they've had their finger on the pulse of the game for a long time, they like to talk to get information of people that are still kind of involved, and I'm happy to help out whenever I can with that.
I imagine when Whitey comes, he kind of steals the show a little bit.
He has been known to do that, yeah, but sometimes they lump the two of us together as far as baseball experts, which is surely a step up for me to be in that category. So Whitey has opinions and never wrong.
Commish, when people look at what the Cardinals have done, clearly a week ago we had the Goldschmidt introductory press conference. That was a big win for them. But stepping back now a week later, people are saying, well, I don't know if that's enough to run down the Cubs, to run down the Brewers. It's a significant move. Do you think it's significant? And have they changed the complexion of their team dramatically?
Oh, yeah. And not just offensively. Goldschmidt's an excellent defender, and he'll save errant throws at first base and also stop balls from going into right field, which was ever since Albert played first base here. They haven't had a good first baseman at all here. Adams wasn't that good defensively. Jose Martinez was awful. Carpenter's so-so at best. But Goldschmidt's excellent, even though he didn't have quite as good a year last year. Now, have they caught the Cubs and Brewers? Yeah, I think they have caught them right now. Have they passed them? No, because they have to fix their bullpen.
How about odds on these guys being in a Cardinal uniform next season? Jed Jerko.
65%.
Jose Martinez.
35%.
Zach Britton.
48%.
Ooh, I like that. And Andrew Miller.
25%.
And do you sense the urgency? Or do you see a difference? Because John Mozeliak said last week, we're all in on 2019, and in the past, he said, I've always looked at 2021, 2022. He said, this move with Goldschmidt is all about next year. They sort of deviated a little bit from their long view of the game.
I think every other move they make now will be will include 2020 and possibly 2021. They won't take another rental player on as like a pitcher, for instance. They'll take the next pitcher they sign will be a multi-year pitcher.
You're an advocate of keeping Jose Martinez because you don't know what's going to happen with Dexter Fowler and playing Jose against lefties.
The guy hit 303 last year, I think, or 305, and knocked in 83 runs. The average was the highest on the team. The RBIs was right there at the top. I don't want to give away a good hitter like that. He's one of the top pinch hitters in the league, too, so there's a way to have him. Now, you come down to numbers. If you have 13 pitchers, which a lot of teams seem to do, that leaves four extra guys. But one of them is your catcher. One of them is Fowler's platoon guy with O'Neill or whoever. That's two. One is
Munoz probably is your.
Well, I don't know. One is an extra infielder, let's say Jerko. And then you have one spot left. Well, they advertised they needed a left-handed hitter this offseason, and they acquired this guy Robinson from Tampa Bay who plays six positions. Well, he's going to be your fourth extra guy because he's a left-handed hitter. He plays six spots. That leaves Martinez. Martinez and Jerko cannot both be on the team. That's why he had one at 65 and one at 35. They're both not going to be here.
Hmm. How about yourself? How much longer can you do this another 10 years?
I'd like to. Three to five is a good benchmark right now. 10 would put me at 82. I don't know about that. But three puts me at 75, and then five puts me at 77. Three would put me at 50 years as opposed to Spats, too. So, but I'd like to go longer than that. But 10 might be a little strong.
Now, will the commish be upping his Twitter game as the year? Was his last tweet? What was the last tweet the commish had? It's about a specific player, right?
It was always about Matt Cain, wasn't it?
Matt Cain, yes. Is the only. Do you only tweet Matt Cain news? Is that your deal?
I've had three tweets in my career all about Matt Cain.
Is that right?
Until he gets hired by somebody, I'm out of it.
You don't have to say anything? Do they ever pressure you? I know you do the chats. Do they ever say, come on, commish, get on Twitter?
They stopped doing that.
They gave up?
They like me to be texting, you know, once in a while, and I haven't done that either. But
you're in good company. Costa says there's zero chance you'll ever see him on Twitter or Facebook.
I'm happy to hear that. What is this Facebook? Are we facing each other now? Is this Facebook?
This is, it could count.
How about how technically savvy you are? I know you'll probably downplay it, but for you to be able to cover a game that ends at 9:15 in Pittsburgh and then to turn it, you have to have somewhat mechanical skills and tech skills, right?
A little bit, yeah. You can always call in and get some help or email it to somebody if you really get strapped. But the bigger skill, I guess, is being able to hit the deadline. You know what time you have to be done by, whether it's A-plus material or C-plus material, you got to be in. But I'm a little more tech savvy than I probably give myself credit for, but not nearly as much as I should be tech savvy.
And Frank mentioned Pittsburgh. That's one of your spots, right?
That's right.
You always take the Pittsburgh trips. It is a good city.
Well, you can stay right across the street from the ballpark.
Do you stay at that one hotel that's just like 10 feet away?
That's 102 steps. Not that I was counting.
No. Well, it's an underrated town. The ballpark's great.
Oh, it's a great. Now, you're so high, though. It's hard to watch home plate activity when you're so high. You see people coming across the three bridges there, and it's really hard to focus in. But luckily, the tape delay on the TV second up above us is 18 seconds, so you can look away and still come back, and you haven't seen the pitch yet.
All right, and the Hall of Fame welcomes Harold Baines. Tony La Russa pretty fired up about the fact that he's in and fired up about the fact that people don't think he belongs. I'm sure you saw some of that fallout. What's fair in analyzing Baines, you think, as a Hall of Fame candidate?
Well, first of all, he had almost 2,900 hits. There's not many Hall of Famers that have more hits than that aren't in. He had 384 home runs, almost 1,700 RBIs. I'm on the committee. I didn't vote on this committee, but I'm on the committee that helped put together the ballot. Harold Baines was one of the 10 names we put on there. And if we didn't think he belonged as a possible Hall of Fame, we wouldn't have put him on there. We had a long, lengthy vote at Cooperstown about this, and we meet again next month to discuss the likes of Ted Simmons and, you know, that Kenny Boyer and other, to localize a little bit. But Harold Baines was on our 10. So, I mean, did I think somebody else might beat him out? Yeah, but I'm not disappointed or shocked that he got in.
So on that committee next year, and Simmons will likely be on that ballot, who could be St. Louisans or Simmons-related guys on that panel?
Oh, they don't announce that until like a week before they haven't even picked them yet, so we don't know. I mean, they don't even announce it until a week before the voting actually takes place.
Okay. Did Whitey not vote for Ted last year? Did you?
He's been on a couple times. I'm fairly certain the first time he did not vote for him. I don't know about – Ted's been on three or four times now, and I don't know which committees what he's been on. But I think the first time around he did not.
Are there any analytics that help Ted, like years later? Because you look at just raw numbers, you say, wow, that's – you look at the benches, you look at the – he looks good when you look at stats that are comparable to catchers. Are there any other metrics out there now that would help him?
Well, I wish they had a metric on home runs and games played at that sweat box, which was old Busch Stadium, which was below street level, and it was 386, the right center, left center field. He caught 150 games there like four or five times. Not played, caught 150 games those seasons. So I think he gets helped by that. Now, also, when he got 11 votes a year ago in this election, we're talking about different era, Robin Yount and Don Sutton were on the panel who played within the Milwaukee in the 1982 American League champions who played the Cardinals in the World Series. So Teddy had not been getting that kind of support before. Now that he got to 11, maybe that'll be a carryover to the next time, but he was only getting 3 and 4 votes before.
Now, Chris Russo brought up Al Oliver and Steve Garvey. If Harold Baines is, he said, now, Tony, you got to start looking at these other guys. And Tony said, sure, then let them in. Is Garvey a Hall of Famer? Is Al Oliver a Hall of Famer?
I think Garvey is. I'm a little ambivalent about Oliver, but Garvey played 1,000-some games in a row, too, at 1,100 or whatever it was. He was next behind Ripken, you know, behind, well, what the record would have been, behind Gehrig until Ripken broke it. So I would say Garvey belongs in. Oliver was a great hitter, okay defender, but I have to look at that. He might, in fact, his name will probably come up. Both names will probably come up when we're up there next month.
Is there a chance you could actually be on the committee that will vote for Ted Simmons, or are you just putting the ballot together?
I'm just putting one of the 11 to put the ballot together. Usually they don't double up on those, so I suspect I will not be on that committee. Yeah.
And then who decides who's on that committee
again? The Hall of Fame decides. Huh. And their breakdown usually is 8 Hall of Famers. Like this time they had 4 Hall of Fame players and 4 Hall of Famer manager types like Torrey, La Russa, and then Shiro's general manager and Pat Gillick, general manager, all in the Hall of Fame. The other 4 go to like club owners and then 4 writers/historians. For 16.
And then here's a local debate. Doesn't really matter, but it's an interesting thought. Does Lee Smith automatically get a red jacket from the Cardinals because he's in the National Hall of Fame?
I think he should, yeah.
I think they're trying to decide down although, at Bush also.
Although Carlton doesn't have one. And so I think.
So it's not an automatic.
Is Carlton in our. He's not in the Cardinal Hall of Fame.
No,
is he?
No, he's been on the ballot.
I think this was grandfathered in. When they started the Cardinals Hall of Fame, that's when guys who were in got the red jacket. So I think Lee Smith will actually have to be elected.
Okay, by the Cardinal fans.
Yeah.
And he's been on our ballot at times.
Our consideration should be I'd vote for him. I've been voting for him anyway. But
right.
But I think now that he's in, I don't see how we can keep him out of the Cardinal Hall of Fame.
And what's your gut on Bryce Harper? What do you think? Do you think the Cubs get in on this at all?
I think they're a possibility. Philadelphia is going to sign Machado or Harper. So if they don't get Machado, and I think the Yankees might get Machado, then I think the Phillies will get Harper.
Good stuff. Kamish, we appreciate everything you've done for us over the years and for being a part of our program. And thanks so much for stopping by.
You bet, guys.
All right, that is the great Rick Hummel joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box.
I'm just dying for Matt Cain to make some kind of news so that the commish mid-luncheon has to tweet out his Matt Cain update. Yeah, I guess special assistant to the general manager.
You mentioned about sports talk radio, about you never know who's listening. Well, Lonnie Folks, the athletic director at Maryville University, he just texted me, tell Martin that I'm listening, and we appreciate.
Gary Kornfeld said, I'm listening. So now if you want to text Martin or Frank, we got to get up to 100. That's Frank's number. There's at least 100 people listening at any given time. Probably a little more than that.
Yes, and we appreciate Maryville being one of our great sponsors. Maryville University. Go to their website, maryville.edu, and find out about their great Digital World programs that provide students with just some outstanding knowledge of iPads and everything technically related, maryville.edu. Also, one of our great sponsors on the program is the Gatesworth, finest in senior living. If you're looking for a place for mom or dad, aunt or uncle or grandma or grandpa, we recommend the Gatesworth. 170 and Delmar is the location. They do a terrific job at the Gatesworth? The answer is always yes when you call down to the front desk. Boy, everywhere you look, you recognize people. There's the great referee, Ron Zetcher, right there. I saw Johnny Rowland walk in. And we're surrounded by sports writers, too. From the Post-Dispatch, we have the commish, Keith Shildroff. Dave Dorr is here. He's one of the organizers. This is really a cool event, Martin.
If we could get Iggy to stop by, we could grab Keith Shildroth and talk some serious bowling.
That's right.
Of the people I know, those are the two bowling aficionados. And really, Iggy's wheelhouse is sort of Hedo, bowling, and porn.
Photographer editor Tony Chambers is listening, so we're up to three. So text Martin or Frank. We want to make sure we get to 100 that you're actually listening to this program this morning. So, all right, let's take a short time out. When we come back, we'll have some outstanding guests. We'll sit a couple of them down here in our next hour. We'll be right back.